Hey, what is up, fam? It's Dr. Dale, and I'm excited to dive into chapter two of my new book, Diverse Medicine, with you all. So last time we went over chapter one. If you missed it, go check out the video. The video is posted on blackmenandwhitecoats.org. It's also on the Black Men and White Coats podcast. So you can check that out on Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever you listen to your podcast. So again, before I dive in, I do kindly ask from the bottom of my heart if you would support me by getting a copy of the book Diverse Medicine. You can grab a copy on Amazon. It's a great read. It's an easy read. I write a lot of my books so you can get through them in a weekend on a plane trip or whatever, just really easy reads. And it's a really good book. So I published 12 books to date, and I would say that, man, this actually is hard. It's a hard thing to say because I love all my books, but this actually might be the one book that I've written that's best encompasses the work, the efforts of promoting diversity in the field of healthcare. This might be the one that's kind of put everything together the best to date. So I do encourage you to grab a copy. I do ask that you grab a copy. Support, if you like the book, please do drop a review as well. Those things actually greatly help an author. So I'll be kindly obliged, greatly obliged to you, should you do that. So if you want to join our email list and stay up to date with everything that we do as it pertains to promoting diversity in the field of medicine, check out blackmenandwhitecoats.org. Backslash email, join our email list, blackmenandwhitecoats.org/email, and join our email mailing list. Stay up to date. We do all sorts of cool things, where youth summits across the country where we're trying to expose kids, mentor kids, inspire kids to consider careers in the field of medicine, mentoring programs, of course, documentary screenings, et cetera, things of that sort. blackmenandwhitecoats.org/email. If you want to know what's going on with our youth summits across the country and when we're coming to a city near you, make sure you check out bmwcevents.com, bmwcevents.com. All right, so let's dive into chapter two. Again, last time we went over chapter one, kind of laid the foundation for why I wrote the book and set the basic argument up front for the book. Now we're going to dive into chapter two. Chapter two is titled Achieving Excellence, Not Equity. Achieving Excellence, Not Equity. And this is a very, very, very important chapter. Foundational chapter in the book, right? You have to understand this chapter, really not just for the book. I would argue that you should understand this chapter if you want to do work in this space. You should understand this chapter, really, if you're, when I say the space, really, if you're in healthcare, you should understand this chapter, because the argument that I lay here, that I set out here, is foundational to improving healthcare across in the United States, right now, honestly, worldwide. So it's called Achieving Excellence and Not Just Equity. And I start the chapter off. And again, please, if you do have your book, you can just kind of skim through and follow along with me. So I start the chapter off with an illustration from the movie The Sandlot. The Sandlot was one of my favorite movies as a child. It's a baseball film about a group of young kids who lose a baseball. They go chasing the baseball, etc. And essentially what happens is one of the kids, Smalls, hits his first home run, knocks it over the fence. And when he sends it over the fence, they're all excited, but Smalls isn't excited. Like, what's the matter, Smalls? Why aren't you excited? And Smalls essentially says, man, that wasn't my baseball. That was my dad's baseball. It's actually his stepdad, but that was my stepdad's baseball, right? And he's freaking out. So the movie is based on the entire journey of the film is them trying to get that baseball back from over the fence where there's a huge dog they call the Beast, and the dog is not letting anybody in his backyard, right? So that's they're trying to get the ball, trying to all sorts of different schemes, and their kids and having a great time trying to get this ball. And finally, at one point in the movie, one of the characters, I think his name is like Victor Demacia, I forgot, but I wrote in the book, he says something to the effect of me, this is me paraphrasing, I blame myself, we've been going about this all wrong. Right. So he has that moment of enlightenment where he says, we've been going about this all wrong and I blame myself. In writing this book, that's the line that came to me. Right. That's the line that came to me when I was thinking about why have we struggled so much to increase diversity in the field of healthcare? Why are, there's so many disparities? Why are there so many issues still as it pertains to inequities and inequalities in the field of healthcare? And that's the line that came to me. I blame myself. We've been going about this all wrong. I blame myself because I feel as though each one of us has to take individual accountability over the situation at large, right? We all have to take individual accountability. We're all a part of this, whether or not you're doing diversity work or not. If you're working in the field of healthcare, we're all accountable to this in some shape, form, or fashion, right? And we've been going about this all wrong. I'm careful in the book to mention I never wants to downplay the progress that those coming before us have made. So there's been great work done, right? And there has been progress. I don't want to downplay that. So I'm going to give them their flowers and say kudos to those individuals and many, many people still doing work, people who've been doing this way longer than I have. So don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that I feel as though we've had shortcomings and we've tried a lot of the same things over and over and over for the past 30, 40 years. And we haven't seen the progress that perhaps we could have if we got more innovative on different angles and tried different things. I'm not saying that I have the answer because I don't have all the answers. What I am saying is that I'm really excited about where we are in time, and I'm excited to see all the new ideas that people of all generations are bringing to the table and getting more innovative as technology is allowing us to do that. And I think as hopefully the barriers of communication will be broken down and we can communicate across lines easier as well. So that's the idea there with that introduction. You know, along that line of being able to cross lines, what do I mean by that? In the book, I give the illustration, I talk about Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington, phenomenal guy, you know, led the Tuskegee back in the day, was the first, I believe, president or so of Tuskegee way back in the day. One of my favorite books, I'll say my second favorite book, my favorite book is the Bible. My second favorite book is Up From Slavery by Booker T. Washington. It's his book. And in the book, you know, it talks about the Atlanta Compromise speech. The Atlanta Compromise speech was essentially gave the speech in Atlanta, and Booker T. Washington took a stance. Essentially, whenever you're trying to get something done, try to work together, try to compromise, try to see what the other party needs, see what your party needs, and really just try to work together to get things done. So that's the stance that he took. And so he made this great speech, the Atlanta Compromise. And part of the speech he's talking about, he tells a story. And again, I'll paraphrase essentially what he says. He talks about there was a ship out at sea, and these guys are out at sea, and you know, they're out there, it's hot, they don't have any supplies, and you're thirsty and you're dying. It feels as though you're dying of thirst, right? So they send the radio, say, Mayday, Mayday, we're dying of thirst, send help. And the person on the other side comes on and says, cast down your bucket where you are. The guy's like, what do they mean, cast down your bucket where you are? Sends it back out, Mayday, Mayday, it's hot out here, we're dying, we don't have supplies, we need water, we need help, send us something. Cast down your bucket where you are. Mayday, Mayday, send us something. We need supplies. We need water. We need, we're dying of thirst. We need your help. Cast down your buckets where you are. And it clicked. We're out at sea, right? Cast down our buckets, get water. We have everything we need to be able to get to where we're trying to go to. Right. So and that's something that's always stuck with me. But I use that illustration in the book, and the general stance of Booker T. Washington would take in general was that, hey, I just use that speech because I really like that speech. But the stance that Booker T. Washington takes is, hey, if we communicate across the lines, both sides, if we work together, understand that we have what we need, but we still want to come to you guys to get. Whatever, I don't even want to say get help, but yeah, it is help. Everybody's got to work together. We still need to come together and figure stuff out because across the board, there's still disparities, still inequities, inequalities. Nobody's even arguing that. That's obvious, right? In my opinion, that's obvious. I don't know if I can even call that an opinion. That's probably factual, right? And what he argued was, instead of always going across and kind of badgering other individuals and saying, hey, you got to give us this, you got to give us that, and say, hey, let's sit down, let's compromise, let's talk this thing through. Let's be diplomatic about this, okay? That was the argument. And I feel as though we need more of that in healthcare specifically. I feel as though that we need to, those of us who are, you know, in the fields working, doing this work, we need to be able to get across these lines and get into these C-suites, executive suites, and communicate to them what's going on and why it's so important. And my belief is that in general, a lot of individuals who might be distant from these issues, distant from the work, you know, they may not have a full understanding as to why this is so important, right? They might not have the full understanding. And it's the duty of everybody, but specifically, you know, I take some responsibility in those who do this work. We take maybe greater responsibility in being able to communicate that. That's why I wrote the book, right? Being able to communicate that. So my hope is that these executives, these leaders who are reading this book, right? We want to communicate that and demonstrate the importance of helping out individuals, of increasing diversity in the field of medicine, et cetera, right? And the key to understand is a rising tide lifts all boats. A rising tide lifts all boats, right? So what do I mean? In the book, I talk about this as well in the book. if you're in power, why would you ever want to give up your power? Right? If you're in a position of power, if you're in a position of dominance, why would I say, oh, yeah, I'm in a position of dominance, but here, you can have it. I'm going to give it to you. Why would you do that? Most people would not do that. Right? So it's not like you can just go there and say, hey, yeah, we need you to help, move more resources over here to help these people who are suffering, who are, you have to demonstrate why that's beneficial to them as well. And that's something that I believe we can do a better job at to get people's buy-in. Because if I'm in power, why would I just give my power up to you? If I have all these resources, why am I just going to give you my resources? Right? You need to be able to demonstrate to me that it's going to benefit me as well, that it's going to is going to be useful, beneficial, is going to meet some of my desires as well. Otherwise, why would I do it? There's an answer to that question. The answer to that question, why would you do it, is because of love, right? That's the answer, because of love. The other answer is you have to see that it benefits you and your goals. All right. So kind of the next subsection in chapter two, I talk about defining equity. So what do we mean by equity? A lot of people will confuse equity and equality. Typically, when you're talking about equality, you're talking about making sure everybody gets the same amount, right? You get $5, you get $5, you get $5. It's equal. Everybody gets the same amount. And that's what a lot of people will argue is the right thing to do, the fair thing to do, right? Everybody gets an equal amount. When we talk about equity, everybody gets what they need, right? Everybody gets what they need to be able to compete, to be able to survive, to be able to thrive, right? So, you might only need $5. This person might need $10. This person might need $2, right? You're not getting equal amounts, but you're getting what you need to be able to do whatever it is that we're talking about, right? So, you want to buy my book. You only have $5. This guy has $7. This guy has $13. That's all you guys have. You're not going to get any more money. Well, if I want you to have my book, you only have $5. I need to give you more money than I need to give them because you're in a different position than they are. And that's what we're talking about when we say equity, right? It's not the same as equality. A lot of people mix those two things up. That's what we're talking about when we say equity. And, the next section of the book is called The Unfairness of Equity. I do understand that when you hear that concept, it comes off as being unfair. I fully understand that. And excuse me. And a lot of individuals would argue against that when you get into, and I don't get into this stuff, so don't get me talking about this just because I'm not going to act like I'm an expert on this by any means. But when you get into critical race theory, et cetera, again, I don't get into that. That's not my mission. That's not my calling. So I don't get into that. But I do hear people using this argument that equity is not right. Equity is not just that, people talk about equity. Equity is not just, well, look, hey, I get it. I'm not saying that equity is at first glance surface level fair, right? I'm not arguing that when it's surface level fair. Now, when you start peeling back the layers of that onion, I think that you do start to see some more fairness. You might start to see some more fairness in this idea of equity over equality as it pertains to distribution. However, I'm not arguing that equity is a fair thing. That's not the argument that I'm making here in this book by any means. So you say, oh, why should it be equitable? Why should he get $20 when you only give me $5? I'm not arguing that it's a fair thing. What I am arguing is that it goes above and beyond being fair. I'm arguing that those individuals who can see things and understand things and appreciate the true essence of equity, understand that equity is about love. Equity is about love. Equity is about saying, I see a person in need. I am not obligated to help them per se, but I want to help that person out of love, out of the goodness, the kindness of my heart, right? That's what equity is about. And for us to be able to kind of rise to a greater level in society as a whole, and I think keep society going, equity is a valuable thing. Example I gave in the book, which I love this example, is you think about sports. Excuse me. Think about sports. Specifically, think about the NBA lottery. For those of you who don't understand how the draft in the NBA works, essentially what happens is you play NBA season, right? And then you have something called the lottery after the season. And what's happening in the lottery is you're taking the teams. It's usually this is kind of how it plays out. The teams that have the worst records, the teams that didn't perform as well this prior season, they get a chance to go into the lottery. And the lottery, just imagine like a real lottery or like a raffle or something, right? Put a bunch of balls in this little spinning thing. The balls are bouncing around. And then they go in there to pick a team out, who gets number one pick, who gets number two pick, and just picking out from these teams and deciding the order that they'll get to pick in the draft. The teams that don't do as well will have more balls in there. So let's say, hypothetically speaking, let's say there's 10 balls in there. And the team that really stinks it up, I'll just say the San Antonio Spurs as an example, because the Spurs, you know, they've got Victor Wembanyama this past year's number one pick. I'll use them as an example. So let's say the Spurs might have 5 balls out of 10, say Spurs on them. And then the Rockets might have 2 balls. And then whatever other team, you know, just throw the Mavs in, Mavs might have 1 ball, whatever, right? But when you put your hand in that raffle and you draw a ball out, the Spurs have 50% of the balls. So more than likely, there's 50% chance of grabbing a ball that says San Antonio Spurs on it. Why do they do that? They do that. That's not equal. That's equitable, right? That's equitable. Just saying, we're trying to put you in a position where we want to be able to give you what you need to compete in this league. And why is that important, right? As NBA commissioner, why would they want that? Why would they care about that? They will care about that because if the same teams are winning all the time and these markets are doing great and these teams are dominating, these other teams, smaller market teams, teams that are losing, they're not going to do as well. They're not going to generate as much money. And eventually those markets might have to shut down. They might lose their team. And we've seen this happen in NBA history, right? Them and other sports history, right? They might have to lose your team. They might have to shut down. So long-term, that's bad for everybody else. That's bad for the NBA. If teams are shutting down here, shutting down there, it's bad for the NBA. It becomes a bad business, right? And if it's a bad business for the losers, eventually it's going to become a bad business for the winners. That's because as a whole, the NBA teams, they need to be able to work together for all of them to survive, right? When everybody's doing better in some shape, form, or fashion, it's a rising tide. Everybody gets better. And that's the way I view society, right? It's not all competition. It's competition, but at the same time, we have to work together so everybody can rise up. Because if you have one sector doing bad, ultimately that's going to impact the other sectors, the other whatever demographics, however you want to say it, and that's going to cause issues for everybody else, right? So that's why equity is important. That's the argument that I make in the book. That's why equity is important. And that's the illustration that I use. I'm not saying that on surface level, equity is fair. I'm going to say that again. I'm not saying on surface, equity. Oh, he got $5. He got $2. That's fair. Obviously, he got 5. He got 2. There's a difference, right? You start peeling back the layers and you see, why did he get 5? Why did he get 2? You know, that could add some value, but still, I'm not saying that that's a fair thing. What I am saying is it goes above and beyond talking about fair, and it goes to a point of love. What do you need? Right. And where's my heart for you? Right. And am I in the position to be able to give you what you need? Because that's a higher level. That's a higher level of society. If we can get to that level, man, we're going to start seeing societies, you know, just go and get better. When people start approaching things from, hey, you're in need, right? Out of a place of love, how can I help you in your place of need? And I believe this is the last subsection in this chapter. I talk about aiming for excellence, right? And it goes back to the chapter title. All right, we're aiming for excellence. And this is something that I believe when people hear diversity in healthcare, they think, oh, we're trying to get rid of just healthcare disparities, right? It's all about disparity. Yeah, there's some truth to that. There is trying to get rid of the disparities it's because you can get rid of disparities by just making things bad for everybody. It could be equally bad for everybody, but we don't want it to be equally bad for everybody. We want it to be equally amazingly great for everybody, right? So there's that aspect of it. But ultimately, when we're talking about equity, when I'm talking about diversity, what I, Dr. Dale Cordudu, I'm referring to, I'm talking about, hey, how can we leverage diversity for excellence for everybody? Not just getting rid of diversity, not just this, but diversity for excellence for everybody. Diversity adds value to systems. And we'll dive into that more throughout the book. Diversity adds values to systems, right? So when you start getting more diversity, what we're doing is we're trying to make healthcare more excellent. a more excellent nation. That's what we're trying to do. It's not just saying that, hey, we're trying to make it better for the underserved, right? The marginalized. That's part of it. But doing that leads to more excellence, diversity, you know, better research, better ideas, innovation, right? Decision-making, perspective, so much value that diversity adds, which again, we'll dive into throughout the book. But that's the point of all of it, is excellence, 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 right? When I started doing this work of diversity, and as I go in the back of my mind is, how can we make everything better? I truly believe, the research is out there. We have the data. Diversity helps make things close, helps bring things closer to excellence, right? And that's the idea there. And that's what we need to sit at these tables and communicate across, right? Across the lines, whatever you want to call it, across the table to these decision makers, right? And some decision makers get it. Some decision makers are on it. They're working hard. They're pushing towards it. And I'm talking about these, you know, big executives, healthcare leaders. They get it, and they're making strides, and they're trying to make this happen, right? And that's phenomenal. But not all of them get it, right? So that's why I wrote this book. That's another thing with this book, right? So again, I ask you to grab your own copy, but get this book in the hands of these leaders, right? Get them a copy, you know, get them a copy. I was excited. The former dean of my medical school, great guy. We stay in touch. You know, he got a copy of my book, and, you know, we've been messaging, and he's writing me these long thoughts on the chapters, and he's just really dissecting it and going into it. And it's phenomenal seeing this coming from a guy who ran, you know, huge healthcare enterprise, right? It's phenomenal just watching, seeing his thoughts on this and the perspectives and things. It's amazing. So that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that this book gets into the hands of leaders, and they get to go through, and they get to dissect it, and they get to think this thing through the same way that this individual is doing, which I just absolutely love. Love the communication with him about this topic, and seeing his perspective as somebody who's ran, right, one of these mega healthcare companies. So that's chapter two. The next chapter, let me see here. The next chapter in the book is the benefits of a more diverse workforce. So that's going to be a great chapter. The benefits of a more diverse workforce. And again, this is what I'm talking about. With diversity, we're not just trying to get rid of disparities, right? That's part of it. But with diversity, what we're really trying to do is we're aiming for excellence. In chapter three, we'll talk about the benefits. All right. Thanks for checking out chapter two of my book, Diverse Medicine, Building a Stronger and Healthier Nation. Again, please grab a copy. You can get a copy on Amazon. Please drop a review. That helps me out a lot. Stay up to date with what we're doing. BlackMenAndWhiteCoats.org/email. And to learn about when one of our youth summits might be coming to a city near you, check out bmwcevents.org. Thanks for checking out chapter two with me. Love you guys.